You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello everyone, I'm Stephen Robb and you're all very welcome along to The Tillage Podcast. It's currently Thursday morning, the 13th of January, and I hope your 2022 is going well so far. Most of us have well and truly returned to normality after Christmas, so be sure to pick up your copy of the Irish Farmers Journal newspaper, which is available in shops today. As always, here to help us break down your key tillage news stories of the week, I'm joined by Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh. Guys, I think everyone is welcoming off the more settled weather that is returning this week. A little bit of frost in the mornings, which is nice. Out and about, walking a few crops this week. I mean, one thing is clear, that crops are lush, crops are advanced. Is there any concern on the ground that crops are a little too advanced for the time of year?
I would say there's certainly concerns, Stephen, particularly for the very early sown crops, because they get difficult to manage and people are very conscious that that's where high lodging risk can come from and high disease pressure can come from. So there's some reason to be concerned, but you know, experience would tell them and me that by the 1st of May, everything will be where it always will be, and that nature tends to balance itself out through the season. But that by itself might not prevent a lodging risk in a crop that was far too dense today. So some of them will need a little bit of thinning out, but perhaps not too much either. You know, basically crops have made the decision that they're now in a position where they can give very high yield potential, perhaps too high to be able to physically carry it on straw. And that's where nature tends to balance itself out. So you want to leave some little bit of room for the thing to kind of find an equilibrium that you can live with, rather than carry this massively high yield potential that's there today.
Yeah, crops starting to turn yellow a bit. I know there was plenty of crops yellow like before Christmas, but I think it's more evident now. The wet weather has played a role in turning crops a little bit more yellow there now at the minute. But I think overall farmers will be happy with the appearance of crops at the minute. And I suppose just, you know, ground is wet underfoot for any other jobs that can be done. You know, there won't be any ploughing or anything else done for a while. Hopefully this dry weather stays.
On that, I think it's important to just make the point that crops don't just turn yellow. And what we're seeing today probably happened 10 days ago. Basically, there's growth conditions there that's trying to drive growth, but there's no nutrient to feed it. And therefore, as it's trying to grow, it does two things. The new foliage looks to be down a notch or two in colour. And to feed those leaves that have come in recent weeks, crop generally devours the older leaves. So they die, the nutrients get recycled to feed the new growth. And that's the nature of crop growth, particularly winter barley, because it shows it most. And, you know, there's good and there's potential bad in it. But in very dense crops, it's probably a good thing to see that going on.
Yeah, it's probably worth people as well just taking note, like, you know, is there crops that in fields that have received farmer manure or slurry or had a cover crop in them previously, are they holding their colour better than others? It might just reassure you that what the management decisions you're making are helping.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely noticeable this year, based on what I have saw anyway. Just on that point, Siobhan, where organic manures have been spread, I mean, they're lush, don't get me wrong, but there's little yellowing apart from some of the parts of the headlands or so. But basically, Andy, you know, at this stage of the year, if you're seeing yellowing, if you're seeing some of the leaves or tillers dying off, don't panic.
No, don't panic, particularly when you're in a big, heavy, dense crop to begin with. It would worry me a little bit more if you had a winter barley crop doing that and there's kind of three leaves and one tiller on it, because it needs to be revved up and driven on if it has that structure. But that's not the structure that these crops have. There's a big yield potential in them, and it's a matter of just trying to get a balance now between protecting that and still maintaining your optimum or maximum yield. I think the big question will be how much fertilizer will ultimately go onto them. Stephen, what you described a minute ago there in terms of crops that have had previous management, like organic manures of sorts, showing a much stronger colour still, you know, that is what I would always have described as power in the ground. Feeding the ground gives that ground more power to keep it going. And if you have a tin crop in the ground and there's power in it today, you might not see it to be an awful lot greener, but you can know full well that it's going to hold more tillers and it's going to hold more grains per plant. And that's what makes higher yields in better soil fertility, soil health situations.
Yeah, and you're also writing about BYDV and management this week.
Yes, Stephen, I'm not in the least suggesting that there's a problem, but I think we just have to be cognizant of the fact that both November and December were 1 to 2 degrees warmer than normal for the time of year. So that if an infection had occurred in a field and there were aphids in it, there's a greater chance that they would be multiplying even at a low rate compared to this time last year. Therefore, if you have a single plant infected here or there in a field, you can never stop that from happening. But what you do want to make sure you do is to prevent any further expansion of that infection into neighbouring plants, because that's what begins to make the patch and the circle and what begins to cause problems in a field. So the general advice would be that if you've had nothing at all, no insecticide at all applied to a field, then there may be an advantage for a spring application at some stage. Now, that would be late January, February, whenever the sprayer is going out to do a different job. It's nothing about doing anything now. But other than that, you know, you don't expect to have to put out more aphicide until we get advice that says that there is a problem out there. The people who would look a little harder, though, are the people that are scourged by BYDV every year, almost regardless of what they do. You know, if you're in those very high risk fields, areas and locations, you would be keeping an eye out over the next few weeks to see if you can see aphids building up on leaves.
OK, Siobhan, the slurry spreading date opens up only seems like a couple of weeks ago since it closed, to be honest. But
yeah, look, weather conditions aren't there. I wouldn't be advising anyone to run out with the spreader. And like, you know, animals were in later this season as well. There shouldn't be a reason for people to be rushing out. Like, if you don't have storage in this year, then, you know, you have to seriously look at your storage setup in zone A there for this opening date.
Yeah, but even at that, I mean, it would be a poor use of slurry to spread it on stubble at the moment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, wait for the proper soil temperatures and weather conditions. Yeah, exactly, Stephen.
And speaking of stubble, that brings us nicely along to our next item. Siobhan, some good news this week. You're writing in the news pages of the paper about the upcoming Nitrous Action Plan. The department are considering rolling back on some of the proposed regulations on overwinter stubble.
Yeah, so another draft of the Nitrous Action Programme came out before December, and there's a consultation open at the minute until the 26th of January for people to review that draft. So I suppose we talked about it a lot on the podcast, that under the new Nitrates Action Programme, they've proposed that you have to have shallow cultivation carried out on harvested crops within 7 days of baling or straw chopping, and cultivation carried out within 14 days of harvesting, basically. So it's a tight time frame for tillage farmers. But I suppose what's worrying in it is there'd be no overwinter stubble left in Ireland. So, you know, the dates are very tight there for the farmers, but we have to think of how these regulations impact on everything. And we hear about sustainability and climate change and all these things, and we know that nitrates and phosphorus are a problem in our waters, but we also have to consider the impacts of these regulations and rules on other things like biodiversity. And we know that there's a biodiversity crisis. So this rule would basically mean there'd be no overwinter stubble in Ireland, which would mean that there's no habitats for certain types of birds. So there's birds that are dependent on overwinter stubble, like skylark, yellowhammer like overwinter stubble, but they can go into cover crops. But there's birds there, the lapwing is another one, and there's red listed birds out there that are in serious danger in Ireland. And, you know, birds that are directly associated with tillage land. So tillage land has decreased in area by 42%, I think, since 1980. In the last 10 years or so, since about 2008, it's declined nearly 60,000 hectares. So there's less tillage land in the country. Then we have an issue that, well, it's I suppose, good decisions from tillage farmers that there has been an increase in winter crops. So we have less tillage land, we've less overwinter stubble. And now this rule would require that we cultivate stubble, that we create a green cover on the ground, whether that just be regeneration or a cover crop, but that the land would be cultivated, that there would be a green cover on the land. And that means that there's no overwinter stubble for these birds. So the department have said now to the Irish Farmers Journal that they're now looking at this issue. So they have ecologists working. They've said that they've asked external experts to look at the regulation as well. And they're looking at research and some research from the UK and places like that. And yeah. So, look, it's a positive thing that they're now looking at a change in this rule.
But we have no indication just yet what that actually means, I suppose, whether or not, you know, a percentage of your farm would have to be left, you know, in stubble, or we just have no, the only thing we do know is that they're looking at it.
Yeah, no indication. And look, hopefully just that the thing would be sensible, you know, that, you know, maybe it's a field, is it's a certain area is left rather than, you know, strips in fields or squares in fields or whatever. Like I know in the UK, they leave skylark patches. Now they do that in growing crops, like in crops of cereals like barley or wheat, but you couldn't do that in Ireland. Like crows aren't as big a risk in the UK as they are in Ireland. But I just hope that whatever rules do come in are sensible and leave enough space for these birds as well. You know, that we have, you don't just have a little square in a field, that you have like these birds, it's to do with finding their food. So they like to be able to hover over the field and swoop down and get the grain or get an insect off a weed growing in the field. So I hope whatever does come in is sensible.
Siobhan, just to pick up on what you said there when you were talking about stubble and birds, it's not the stubble per se that's the issue. It's the fact that seeds that were shed are on top of the ground. And if you've cultivated them, you make them very difficult, if not impossible, to find by birds walking around on the surface.
Yeah, so it's the grain that they're looking for, and they're looking for insects as well that might be in the field as well. So it's, you're taking away their food source, basically, Andy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll wait and see what comes of this, and so, but positive news. So, guys, on the tillage pages this week in the paper, you have tackled quite a complex topic. And it's all to do with compiling your own farm nutrient records and essentially doing your own farm nutrient management plan. Guys, just give us a flavour of what's on the pages and what can readers expect.
Well, Stephen, starting out at a basic, it's something that people are obliged to do. Every farmer is obliged to have a record of the nutrients used, purchased and used on the farm, organic and inorganic. And it's something that everybody for cross compliance must have. But a lot of the time, farmers hand the information over to somebody else. The record gets done, it's there. But there's actually quite a lot of learning that can be achieved if you've tried to do it yourself, particularly in a year when we're facing into higher fertilizer costs, and that may relate predominantly to P and K, but it might also relate significantly to lime. You know, the fact that you have to have a number of samples taken per, say, a 20 hectare field. It's kind of maximum of 5 hectares per sample, providing the field is uniform, and if not, it's a 4 hectare unit or lot per sample. You know, if you're getting variability in a field, and if you know there's variability in a field in terms of how the crop grows at different times of the year, or how difficult or easy it is to pull a cultivator through different parts of it, that's indicative of the fact that there is likely to be different fertility bases in that patch towards another patch. And people should use the need to have a number of samples per field to try and isolate the consequences of that type of natural variability that's there. you know it rather than ignore it. And if you know those things, you can probably build your field to have a higher overall potential and certainly give yourself better advice in terms of what's wanted where, and also hopefully give yourself a higher average yield out the other end, which is the major objective we all have, and or decrease the amount of P and K you might apply in places in the year that's in it, or maybe even nitrogen for that matter, because you've just learned something about your field or part of your field you didn't know before. So that's the premise. To do that and to work out your nutrient allowances is very complex. Of that there is no doubt. But it's all based on Chagas Green Book, the general advice in terms of quantity and rotational slot or whatever that is given per application of the individual nutrients, NPK in particular. And, you know, making the best of them means that you know what's likely to be in the ground. So that means you follow the indices from the soil tests for P and K, or you follow the indexes for nitrogen, which is much more based on crop and rotation than it is anything to do with soil test. So combining all of those things together, you can calculate the amount of nutrient that you are legally allowed to use on a farm. And that means that you will be abiding by the law. And when you're doing that, you might take an even closer look this year and see where that nutrient is more or less likely to pay, given that your fertilizer bill could be an awful lot higher if you were to try and use the same volume of nutrients as previous years.
Yeah. So what the two of you have done to try and bring this home as such and give a real practical example is you've done just that. You've given an example of five fields, different sizes, three different crops, and a range of different soil indices as such. And basically, you've tried to calculate the appropriate chemical fertilizer rates for each field.
Yes, we kept organic manures out of the equation just for simplicity. But whether it's whether you supply it by organic or by artificial, basically you establish the maximum quantity of nutrients that can be applied on each parcel, and therefore that can be used on each field, and then add them all together and you have your maximum amount of nutrient for your farm. And you know, that's what we've done. It's relatively simple when you have it set up, but you do have to know and understand the basis for which these allowances are made, and you've got to be able to calculate from them. But knowing that can actually be very good in terms of helping you to make better decisions for the year ahead.
Yeah, and it'll help you to really look at your compounds as well. And this year, like, there might be some better value between the different compounds, you know, depending on the different rates of NP and K in them. And it might just make you think and have more of a mix of compounds across your farm to see what can get you the best value. But it's a really worthwhile exercise this year, more than any, to do it yourself and physically go through the whole farm and see where you can possibly save. It's definitely something that all people should be trying, even if they do it on a percentage of their farm, and you know, an advisor does the whole farm or whatever, but it gets you thinking.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you chat to some farmers and they shudder at the thought of nutrient management plans, particularly where there's a fairly broad range of crops, or maybe where livestock or organic manures are included because of the complexity involved in it. But as the two of you have rightly said, it'll likely pay off for you, particularly this year, by just going a little bit deeper and understanding it a little bit more. So, Siobhan, this week we also have the spring recommended list. We have the spring bean recommended list and the spring cereals recommended list. On the bean side of things, anything new or exciting?
Yeah, there is. So there's a new variety, Victus, and well, there's two new. So Victus and Caprice have been added to the list this year. But Victus claims to be low in antigen and nutritional compounds, so they're vicing and covicing, and they might make it easier for the mills, I suppose, to use beans in the ration. So I suppose there's a lot of positives in protein at the minute. You know, there's a lot of work going on in the industry. There's a lot of research going on. And there's a plan there that came out before Christmas to increase the, to double the area to 20,000 hectares. And I suppose this year is likely or expected to be a big year for beans. So there's four varieties. So Lynx remains the most available variety on the list. It's nearly 60% of the seed. Then Victus, that low, the Covicin and Vicin variety is 14%, Caprice is 13%, and Fanfare is 15%. So look, beans will be the kind of the first crop out of the trap. So I suppose people would want to be getting their orders in, especially when, you know, a lot of farmers are considering beans because you don't have to apply any nitrogen. So there'll probably be demand there. So it'll be important to have your order in for your seed. But yeah, the list is up on the website. And the table is there with all the traits in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And same goes for the cereal list. Just on that, there were, I suppose, across winter, across spring barley, spring wheat and spring oats, there's five new varieties added. So we have Geraldine Skyway and SY Amity, their new spring barley varieties, Prospect and SY Ardoran have been dropped. On the spring wheat side of things, KWS Starlight is now dropped from this year's list, while Hexham is fully recommended. We also have two new varieties, KWS Helium and WPB Duncan. And on the oats side of things, no new varieties, but Delphin has been dropped. So as we rightly pointed out, those lists are available on farmersjournal.ie or on the Department of Agriculture's website. We're going to park it there because we want to come back to this in a couple of weeks' time, particularly when we're getting a little bit closer to sowing time. We're going to go through the varieties in detail and dedicate a podcast to that. Just before we move on, do you have any indication, guys, on seed this year? Is there likely to be any issues? There probably won't be seed available for all of the new varieties, I would imagine, particularly the provisionally recommended.
I have availabilities here, Stephen, and I suppose we've published them in the paper before, and I think we have them online, and maybe it's worth us pushing them out again online. I suppose I won't go through them all here, but I don't know of any issues, Andy, is there any issues maybe in oats with seed? Or
the only difficulty that I had heard about was that there may have been an issue on oats. Now, I stress may have been. It may have been sorted out or resolved. I don't know. But within a normal total crop area sown in spring, we would be likely to have more than enough cereal seed. Of course, that always begs the question then, if somebody else is looking for it, it might get exported. But I don't think there's a major requirement for spring cereal seed anywhere, at least in Europe at the moment. So I think there will be seed there, particularly when we might see another 4,000 or 5,000, 7,000 hectares reverting to beans. It'll be that little bit less overall cereal seed requirement.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the availabilities here just on those new varieties for spring barley, and they're around, the Skyway and Geraldine are around 6% and SY Amity is 4%. So there is small amounts of those new varieties available.
Okay. Yeah, the one that I don't know the answer to offhand would be another crop that could be in very high demand, and that would be spring oilseed rape.
Yeah.
Now, that's all imported, but I don't know what the availability is. But like, when I look at potential margins at the moment from crops, the saving on nitrogen on beans might look attractive, but the price that's available for spring rape at a normal 100 to 120 kilo nitrogen application rate, it just stands out head and shoulders above any cereal. So it's the one that would be of very considerable interest, I think, or should be of interest to a lot of farmers to get a bit of that in if they have a rotation slot that suits.
Okay, Andy, while I have you, on the grain market side of things, anything wild happening?
Wild, Stephen, I think the answer is no. Futures markets certainly have been bouncing about. They've been up, they've been down, they've been down, they've been up. And that's just what they're doing, you know, slightly more intent in the markets than there was a fortnight ago, and that's what the holiday season does. But, you know, they were up on yesterday morning. They were falling again yesterday afternoon. And they literally just keep oscillating about the place. But on the home market side, on the physical markets, prices kind of are steady as she goes, still looking at 300 plus for wheat and knocking on the door of 300 for barley. It was interesting. Glanbia came out today with prices for next harvest. And that would be prices for their growers with 242 for wheat. Sorry, that was yesterday they issued that test, that text, 242 for wheat and 232 for barley. So, you know, we're looking at next year's prices as being strong relative to historical years, but whether those prices reflect what will happen at harvest, nobody knows. They could be higher and they could be lower.
Okay, but still something to regard as positive. Siobhan, just briefly, you have a piece in this week about how sheep wool is going to solve our nitrogen issues.
Yeah, look, just an interesting one. Gary Gillespie in UCD, he works on the Consus project in UCD with Kevin MacDonald, and they're often doing really innovative stuff. But Gary, he did kind of a review of literature and information that's available from the sheep census, and looked at, like, we know that wool is a huge problem in the sheep industry at the minute, that, you know, farmers have no sale for it, and it's costing them money to shear the sheep. So Gary was looking at the fertilizer crisis, I suppose we could call it, and then looking at the crisis in the sheep industry with the wool, and he was trying to come up with a solution for both. So he's looked at using hydrolysis, so like using high temperatures and then acids and enzymes and bases to break down the protein in the wool and extract the nutrients. So he thinks he can get 1,800 tons of nitrogen, 1,000 tons of sulfur, and then get some copper and zinc out of the wool as well. So, look, he's...
Out of how much wool is that now? How much wool would it take to do that?
That's all the wool that would be available in Ireland. So he took the sheep census and the number of sheep, and he said that the amount of nitrogen would make up 60% of the nitrogen applied to cereal crops in Ireland. 16, I don't know what I said there, if I said 16%. So look, it's just an interesting thing, I suppose. It's people are looking at different things and getting a bit innovative, and I think, like, Gary is trying to investigate this a bit further now. Reading the report, he has a site picked out for where the factory would go anyway. He has it in Athlone, so he's getting invested in it.
No, absolutely. Nothing breeds innovation like a good crisis. So, Andy, to wrap up for the week, looking at the weather ahead, what kind of a week do we have in store?
Well, Stephen, again, just looking at the forecast that's into us in the Farmers Journal from Met Éireann, the first comment I would say is that it's an absolutely unique picture that I'm looking at. Unique because for the second stroke, third week in January, the vast majority of days comprise of zero rainfall. Now, it's not totally zeros, but there's one, you know, you've been plagued with a good bit of water in the northwest over the past couple of weeks. There's a mill forecast for you, your area, for the next week. That's on Sunday. And Sunday is a damp day. I'm going to describe it as that across the country in the forecast. A few areas have another mill on Monday, and it looks like the west and the southwest are probably just going to get the highest level of rainfall, which in the forecast is 6 mil for the next week. So, you know, unique, that high pressure dominating, and certainly resulting hopefully in very little rain, and I hope the forecast comes true for everybody. Generally, a not so windy week ahead as well, which will be good. But it might not make an awful lot of difference if there's not a lot going on. But temperatures certainly falling down pretty well. Maximum temperatures daytime running 6s to 9s with an 11 for Tuesday. And minimum temperatures running from 4s to 0s. So it's going to be, I would say, a continuation of hardy weather, and with a mild wind blowing alongside it, there'll probably be a wind chill factor that'll make it feel a little colder. Probably not good for aphids, which would be good for farmers.
Excellent, Andy. That's good to hear. So absolutely no excuses for anyone not to get out and take some soil samples this month. So I suppose just before we go, a quick reminder that the first session of the Chagas National Tillage Conference, which is all online, is taking place today, Thursday, the 13th of January at 11:30 a.m. Pre-registration online is required, and the topic is all around managing crop nutrition, and for obvious reasons that will be essential viewing this season. So from there, we are going to have to leave it. So from Andy, Siobhan and myself, Stephen, Rob, thank you all very much for listening, and until next week, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.